This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Today I'm talking with Elizabeth Reese from Twin Cities Live and about her gardening and her homesteading adventures. Good morning, Elizabeth. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome, and thank you for being willing to do this, because when I sent you the email, I sent it for grins and giggles. I didn't think you'd actually respond to me.
And then I said, of course I'll do your podcast. You want me to talk about my favorite topics? I'm in.
Yeah, I was so surprised when I saw it come through. I went, oh. And my husband heard me say it, and he said, what? I said, well, I did this thing, and I didn't think that it would happen, and it's going to happen. And I explained, and he was like, yes.
Oh, that's so sweet. Well, listen, I love podcasts. I think podcasts are the greatest. They're my favorite thing to be a part of. I don't know. The best conversations happen on podcasts. And I do a lot of TV and radio and all sorts of different things, but podcasts are a different deal. They're special.
Yes. And they're very, I feel like it's the virtual version of sitting across the kitchen table from each other over a hot beverage, just kind of shooting the shit.
So I agree.
All right. So Elizabeth, tell me about yourself, because not everybody knows who you are.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, let's give you the quick version. I'm Elizabeth Reese. I am a mom of three little kids. They're 9, 6, and 3. And they, along with my husband, Jay, are the loves of my life. We live in Minneapolis in the city. And we've lived in the city for, gosh, I've lived in the city of Minneapolis now for about 15 years. I host a television show called Twin Cities Live, and it's on weekdays from 3 to 4:30. My co-host name is Ben Lieber. He is a broadcaster. He's a former NFL player, and he's super fun and wonderful. And we have a fantastic team of people who work on the show. And I've been in TV for about 20 years. And then my real like love and passion is for gardening and urban farming. And I've been a backyard chicken keeper for, gosh, probably a dozen years. And I'm always looking for ways to get the city of Minneapolis to allow me to have goats. So far, they are not going for it, and it enrages me.
I have a joke that you can tell people when you all bring right. that up. We wanted, I love goats. I love baby goats. In particular, I have talked about this ad nauseum in the episodes that I've done so far. And I really wanted a goat when we lived in Jordan, but we lived in town, and there was no way. So I made the joke to my husband. I said, what if we just get a goat and we have it, a baby goat, and we have it inside? And if the city questions us, we can say it's just a dog with a broken bark and messy and messed up feet.
And maybe you shouldn't judge my dog. Maybe you should tone down on the judgment.
Yep. And so we didn't actually ever do it. But when I said it, I thought he was going to fall over laughing. He said, that is the strangest description of a goat I've ever heard.
It is so funny. I know. Well, they say like chickens are the gateway to goats, and then goats are the gateway to cows. You know, this is what ends up happening to us. Mm-hmm. We want all of these things. And then you sprinkle in some ducks and maybe like an alpaca or two.
Yeah. Or a llama, even. A llama, yeah. They're even more obnoxious. So. It'd be great.
I love it.
But our tenth of an acre lot wouldn't have afforded us the room to have all those creatures. So it did not happen. And then we moved to a 3.1 acre lot. And do you think we have any of those yet? And we do not.
No,
we have chickens. We have a dog. We have 3 barn cats. That's it.
That's still pretty good, though. You know, you can do a lot with a flock of chickens. It really is amazing how much just having chickens is enough to really, I think, feel like you've got somewhat of a complete system, right? Because, you know, the chickens eat the scraps, the chickens provide the compost for the garden, and then they also provide the eggs, and you've got a nice little operation going on there, a little ecosystem of your own.
Yes. And we had chickens when we lived in Jordan. We only had 4. And it was, I've told the story before, but there were no laws in Jordan at the time regarding people having chickens.
Yeah.
It seemed as though it might be frowned upon. And I was like, well, I'm a permission kind of girl, but in this case, I'm going to be a forgiveness kind of girl, because it was back when that first bird flu came through.
Oh, yeah.
And so we got four chickens, and we told our neighbors before we did it, we said, we're going to get four chickens, no roosters. And are you okay with us having chickens? Because we lived really close to our neighbors. And luckily, the two neighbors that lived closest were like, of course, that's fine. And so it all worked out. But if they hadn't been happy about it and we hadn't asked them, if all they had to do was complain, and we would have had to get rid of the chickens.
I know. I know. You got to love living next to chicken people. When we moved to this house, I was a little nervous about it because we'd had them for, you know, probably 7 years in our old house, which was just a mile down the road in Minneapolis. But I thought, oh gosh, I hope that I don't have to like go to every neighbor and get this signed and ask and this whole thing again. And then our next door neighbors love backyard chickens so much that they ended up building their own coop like a couple years later. And so now we chicken sit for each other and it works out the best. And we get to chat with each other's chickens.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And really, a couple of our neighbors sort of squawked about getting chickens of their own, but they never did it. So
yeah. It's worth it. It's so fun. It's the best. I love it. And I've transitioned to the last batch of chickens that I got. I bought like 11-week-old pullets. And I do love having baby chicks, but I don't know if I'll go back to it, because it was very nice to just bring them right out to the coop and just go for it and not do the baby chicks in the brooder box and the whole thing.
Yeah, it's babysitting on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expensive to feed them up to that 18 to 22 weeks.
Well, totally. And then when you think about the price of a pullet, which is like $25 compared to like a $6 chick, it really, when you look at the cost of the feed and all that stuff and the labor, it's definitely more beneficial to buy them older from a price perspective.
Yeah, and I hate to be shallow, but baby chicks, when you get them, they're fluffy and they're adorable. And then they hit the awkward stage and stay there.
I know.
For weeks.
Yes.
And I don't really like chickens to begin with. Like, it's they're fine. They serve a purpose. They have a job. They provide me eggs so I can bake things. But they're not my favorite thing ever. They're not like a kitten or a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just as soon get the fully grown egg producing chicken and call it good.
I'm a fan of that situation.
Yeah. Luckily we have friends that always have chickens, and when we're running low on chickens, because things happen to chickens that you expect to happen.
That's true.
I message her and say, do you have any laying hens for sale? And she says, yes, we do. Or no,
oh
we don't,
gosh.
But soon we will. And I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to need 10. She's like, okay. Perfect.
That is the hardest thing when you have a small flock. You know, we only have three, according to the city of Minneapolis, but, you know, and so we have, and it gets difficult because when you lose one, and then you're worried about if you lose another one, like right now we have two. And so when one goes, then you can't just have one. And then adding chickens to a small flock is very complicated. It's much more complicated than people say. People are like, oh, you just put them in the coop at night and they're fine. That has never happened to me. It's always like a fight, and they get these chickens turn nuts, and it's like a whole thing. So I find friends who have a ton of chickens, and I'm like, can I bring this one bird over, and then it'll just disappear into the flock? And that's what happens. And then I get a new batch.
That are all friends.
Yes. That's the way that I've learned the hard way that it is more complicated to add a chicken to a small flock than one might expect.
Yeah, my parents were talking about getting chicks to raise up and add to their flock, and they did it a couple years ago. And I was like, where are you going to put those babies until they're big enough to meet their older friends?
Yeah.
And my mom was like, in the basement with the thing that they live in, and the heat lamp and the stuff. And I was like, okay, you know your basement is going to smell terrible before you get them out, right? And she said, yeah, but it's the basement, who cares? And I said, okay, all right, yes, you guys are my parents, you obviously are older than me, you know what you're doing, go for it and let me know how it goes. And my mom called I think the day after they took them down to the separate part of the coop where they could be introduced but not be with the other chickens. I said, "How's your basement smell?" She says, "It's pretty ripe down there." I said, I bet it is. I said, "How long is that going to last?" She said, "Until your dad cleans it up and opens both doors to the basement and lets the air in." I'm like, "Okay, great. Fantastic." She had a plan. She knew what she was doing.
It is. They get dusty. It gets all over the place. But it's worth it. It's all worth it, I think. And it's good to have a little dirt in your house. It's good for your immune system.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I just, the whole idea of how stinky chickens are in their pretty little house, I was like, oh, no. But it all worked out. The upstairs was fine. The basement got aired out. And I don't think they've gotten baby chickens since. So I'm not sure how really well it went, but the chickens got introduced and everybody's happy. So it's fine.
I love it.
Yes. But hearing them talk about it, I could not stop laughing. My mom says, "Are you laughing at me?" And I'm like, "No, I'm laughing with you. This is a great story. I will be telling this story for years to anyone who will listen." So you garden too. I was looking at your Facebook page and your blog, and you like gardening. You love gardening.
I do. Yeah, I do. I love it. It's, I kind of think of it as like a moving meditation. So it's just, I'm always looking for things that I can do that make me feel like just very present and in the moment. And gardening is one of those things. And I don't know, it's, I always think about like particularly trellising plants, you know, like cucumbers and beans and things that grow up. Mm-hmm. It just never ceases to amaze me. Every single year when I plant those particular plants, and then I will see, and you can watch their little tendrils coming out and searching for something to grab onto and curl around so that it can then climb up to the next level. I think it's just the most miraculous, amazing thing. And there is something about gardening, which, you know, that idea that you can cultivate plants, that you can put things and you can create things and grow things that you can use and feed your family with, but also at the same time, understanding that it would happen without you. It would mm-hmm. because nature is so infinitely wise and beautiful that I talk about this on my podcast a lot, is sort of the importance of feeling simultaneously that your life and what you have to offer the world is significant, while also understanding that your life and what you have to offer the world is totally insignificant in the whole scheme of things. And that is a really beautiful juxtaposition. And it's super freeing when you can kind of sit in between those two truths and understand that even though they're seemingly opposite, that they work so beautifully together.
It's comforting. That juxtaposition is comforting, because you're like, I can try, I can do, I can be anything. But in the grand scheme of things, it only really matters to me, and mm-hmm. what I do affects only those who it affects.
Yeah. And in a couple generations, you're forgotten, and that's okay. It's like, that's just okay. It's very freeing. So I don't know, being in the garden to me is just the happiest place. I find my happiest days are if I can go into the garden and just spend a little time in the morning and spend a few minutes and then kind of check in the evening when I get home. And it's been really fun as I've, you know, become a mother and my children have grown up, to just see their excitement for the process as well. And we have a little yard. I mean, we live in Minneapolis. We have a bigger yard now than we used to, but our former house was 0.13 of an acre. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what you can do with a small space.
What did you do with your 10th of an acre? Because we put in gardens and flowers on the same size lot.
Yeah, we lived there. So when I moved into the house, so that house was next to, just a few doors down from, the Dowling Community Garden in Minneapolis, which is a really special space because it's one of only two remaining victory gardens from World War II that are still active gardens in the country. The other one is right outside of Boston. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved into our little bungalow house. I mean, it was 1,100 square feet and a great, it's a classic little story and a half house in Minneapolis. I bought it on my own. So I bought it. I actually closed on the house and then met my husband that same week. Mm-hmm. And one of the first pieces of mail I received when I moved into that house was a seed catalog. And it was addressed to Rose Pearson. And Rose Pearson was not the person that I bought the house from. I bought the house from a couple who, I think she was from Sweden. And so they moved back to Sweden. But they had purchased the house from Rose's family from the estate. And Rose and her husband, Elof, they lived in the house for, you know, probably 50 years. And they started the Victory Garden during World War II. And
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So they were one of the founders of it. And so it was really cool because it had such a cool history. And, you know, the garden now is still like 25 acres in the city. There's an elementary school right there as well. But and back when Rose and Elof had the garden, the plots in the garden were massive. You know, the community garden plots are still pretty big, but then I think they were like four times the size what they are now. And so some of the neighbors, like the old timers, all remembered Rose, and they would tell me about how Elof died long before her, but she lived in the house on her own, and she would have this big like straw gardening hat on, and she would garden several plots in the community garden, and then also had an organic garden in the backyard of the home that I purchased. And it was really lovely. Like, I didn't have a driveway, so that was helpful. So it didn't take up, you know, I didn't have a driveway taking up a lot of space. So that back spot of the yard was fenced off and had a bunch of, like, you know, wooden divider beds. I wouldn't call them raised beds because they weren't really raised, but they were divided. And then my husband we pulled up all of that wood several years later after it was kind of rotting, and it was difficult to like define where the plants were going. And it was so much weeding. And then he did some new raised beds in there that were awesome. But it was probably, gosh, I don't know, like 10 by 10 feet. Maybe more like, well, maybe it's a little bit bigger than that, maybe 15 by 15, but it wasn't a massive space. And then tucked in the other corner by the garage is where I had the chicken coop. And so I kept the chickens in there, and I would kind of do some like makeshift fencing to kind of keep them corralled while giving them a little bit more room to roam. And then the whole yard was fenced in, and it was really lovely. And then we planted a really beautiful tart cherry tree in the front yard, and we had an apple tree in the backyard as well. So it's kind of incredible what you can do with a small space.
That all sounds so familiar, because we did pretty much the same thing.
Great. Only
we were not in Minneapolis. We were in Jordan.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been down to Jordan or not, but
I know they have the world's largest candy store there.
They sure do. And the people that own it are the nicest people in the world. Like, I don't really know the husband really well, but his wife, she is amazing. I love her. Every time we go in there, she comes running out from behind the counter and gives me a big hug.
Aww.
So they're super nice people. And Robert is the husband's name. And he is the most creative man I have ever known when it comes to marketing. This guy just comes up with new things every single year.
So fun.
I love him. He's so great. And his wife's name is Renee, and she is just the loveliest woman. I adore her. And it's funny, because the first time we ever went into the candy store, it was a lot smaller then. It was 20 years ago. Renee was not as friendly. She was very distant when we met. And I don't know what was going on there. And then we kept going back. And we went back for like 2 or 3 years in a row, because it's a really fun place to go, and we had kids. And the third year we went in, she was like, "Hi, guys," and came out and gave me a big hug. I was like, "Oh, I love you. You're fantastic. Yay, we're friends now." So it was very exciting to make that connection, because I'm not from Minnesota. I'm from Maine. And so finding someone that was Minnesotan was important to me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe she grew a garden in between there and got really happy.
I don't know. I don't know what was going on. I almost feel like the candy store was her husband's baby. And then as it went on, she became more a part of it and she got more comfortable there, I think. But either way, she is lovely. And anyone who wants to meet a really beautiful person, they need to meet Renee. She's great. So, and I didn't even mean to go down this road on old home days, but that's what I'm doing. So yeah, we had a tenth of an acre lot. We had a veggie garden. Mm-hmm. We had an over 100-year-old rhubarb patch that was there when my husband bought a house.
Oh, I love that.
Huge, huge rhubarb patch. And my neighbor basically is a horticulturalist. She's like two credits shy of a horticultural degree. And she asked if she could have some of the rhubarb. And I was like, of course. So she came over and she's looking at the roots. And she says, this patch has been here for a very long time. I said, how do you know? She said, I can tell by looking at how big the roots are. And there are other things you look for to know how old rhubarb is. I said, how do you know? She said, because I went to school for a horticultural degree. I said, okay. Now I understand. And she said, you want to make sure you keep this patch going. She said, if you ever move, dig some out and take it with you. And we did.
So. Oh, that's great.
But yeah, gardening is amazing. And I used to be very into it. My husband is like off the deep end into gardening. He is the gardener. And so he has a 130-foot by 100-foot garden here.
Wow.
And it started out more like 50 by 60. And he is now at the point where we're selling produce at the farmer's market in Le Sueur.
Oh, that's amazing.
And we have a farm stand now on our property where people can just come in and see the sign on the door, whether it's open or not. And they go in and pick out what they want and drop money in a bucket. So
that's such a dream. I love that idea. I love the idea of like doing an urban farm stand, but the city of Minneapolis won't let me sell my eggs. And I don't have enough eggs to sell.
That too. Yeah.
But that's very cool.
Yeah. And I don't want to defend big cities, but I'm going to defend big cities for a second. It's really hard when you live in a built-up area with lots of people to have the city allow us a roadside stand or a on-property stand or a cooler with eggs in it, because I think it has to do with traffic. Like, I assume that you live on a street with other houses, mm-hmm. and if you've got people pulling in to stop and look at your produce and decide what they want and pick it out and put it in a bag and put money in a bucket and then leave, that's going to tie up the street and stuff. So I'm assuming that the city has reasons for what they do. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
That's very kind of you. And that's very kind of you. I think, you know, I would love to personally just see more policies in place that really encourage people to have a little bit more sovereignty when it comes to growing their own food and being encouraged to do that. And I think, you know, a lot of that also, it just comes, even if you, regardless of the food, there are a lot of city initiatives that are in trying to encourage, you know, more pollinator friendly yards. Mm-hmm. And that is, having a garden is such a huge way to do that. And so, I think the more that we can do that, the better we are. And it's interesting, you know, the city, for all I like, I mean, we love Minneapolis so much, but the city of Minneapolis had a chicken ordinance in place where you could have backyard chickens long before most of the suburbs. I think the suburbs are the ones where it can be a little bit trickier, because the suburbs sort of want to have that identity as being like urban and there's tons of stuff to do here and it's really great to live here. And so some of those more like gardening and having backyard chickens is something that they've historically kind of fought against. And fortunately, I think more and more municipalities are saying, hey, you know what, we can do this and people can do it and it can be a really great thing. I mean, there was talk about going back to World War II. I mean, there was an initiative that there should be chickens in every yard. Everybody should have chickens, and that growing your own food is the patriotic thing to do. And I mean, how cool would that be if that sort of mentality was something that was continuing today?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I do. And that's why we don't live in a city anymore. We live outside of Le Sueur by 5 miles, and we are, our nearest neighbor is half a mile away. And
isn't that great?
I am so in love with it. I don't have words big enough to tell you. And I am a word girl. I have words for everything, but I still haven't found the word. Tickled pink is as close as I've gotten. But you've got me thinking about cities now. Jordan, where we lived, is not a big city. It is a town.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
really,
not a suburb. I mean, it's its own town.
No, it's a town.
Right.
And I mean, I would call it a village. It's darn close to a village, not a town. But I didn't dare to go to the city council or the city people and say, we'd really like to have 4 chickens because we'd really like to have eggs that we don't have to spend $10 a dozen for. Mm-hmm. And that's if we can find them during that bird flu. I didn't want to go ask because I was afraid they were going to say no.
Yeah.
So I didn't ask. I figured, well, if they come and tell me I have to get rid of 4 chickens, we'll get rid of 4 chickens. But in the meantime, we'll have eggs to feed our kids. So that was why that happened. I'm going to take this a little bit in a little bit of a different direction. I have a question for you that has to do with your profession.
Okay.
When you were growing up, did you think that you would be doing what you're doing as your jobby job?
I definitely didn't think I would be doing like lifestyle television because I didn't even really know that that would be an option. But when I was pretty young, I knew I wanted to work in television for sure. I was probably about 12 or 13. And I remember, we had like the local news on and, it could have been KSTP. I don't remember, but I remember watching that and kind of having this little voice inside of me that said, I can do that. I could do that. Mm-hmm. And that just always stuck with me. And then it was sort of, I mean, it was many years of just the right people would kind of show up in my life at the right time to offer mentorship and advice. And I just kept getting this, like, you know, I would just get these little signs that like, oh, here's the next thing. Here's the next thing. Here's the next thing. And I found that I always loved learning about TV. I always loved, I don't know. I would just like, I would devour like all these books by particularly like female broadcast journalists. And I was just very interested in storytelling. And some of that, you know, my dad was a Lutheran minister when I was growing up. So I think some of that was always sort of part of my life. I definitely knew that I would never want to be a minister or be married mm-hmm. to a minister. But I did love, I think, connecting through people with storytelling. And I saw the impact of that. My dad is a really great speaker. And being able to see how he would weave together like anecdotes from our family or from just people he encountered in with a message from the Bible and then be able to leave people feeling more connected to each other and to God, I thought was really inspiring. And my dad, you know, we went to like a conservative Lutheran church. So it wasn't like any sort of fancy mega church situation. It was just a small, sweet connection that I valued and I appreciated. And so I think that was part of it. My upbringing, I think, had a lot of that helped me a lot in terms of preparation for what I do now.
Okay. You said that you read a lot of books about women in news.
Yeah.
Were you also an information junkie? Like, were you very into learning about everything?
Yeah. I mean, I've always been a big reader, and I mean, I credit that with my parents too. I mean, I joke that they would like censor everything. Like, we weren't allowed to listen to Madonna. I was not allowed to watch MTV. We weren't allowed to, my parents for some reason had this thing with, you can't do that on television, which was on Nickelodeon, which they would not let us watch.
Oh,
because
funny.
I think because people would get slimed, which is sort of funny that I was at Mall of America and got slimed yesterday, which
nice.
Is like, very funny, but they would never censor books ever. So I would be like like 13 reading Stephen King and like John Saul. And I told Stephen King that when I met him, and he was like, that's really fascinating that you were that young. But I was able to just devour anything. I remember my going to the library and my, I would hear other parents saying like, you can take 4 books home, you know, which I get as a parent, because, you know, if you don't want to be like hunting down library books and getting library fines, you know, you want to make sure that you know how many you're getting and how many you're taking home. But mm-hmm. my dad would say, you can take as many as you can carry.
Yep.
Take as many as you can carry. And so even if he knew, like, there's no way they're going to be able to get through all of these books, like I would, you know, I'm not going to be able to read 15 chapter books until it's due. But he just, I think, always wanted us to know that we could read as much as we want, and we could read anything that we wanted. And I definitely really appreciated that. And my mom was the same way. She read a lot. And so that, that like love of learning and love of storytelling was always important to me. And I've certainly gone through times where I haven't read as much, you know, like anytime I've had a baby and then I'm mm-hmm. like, I'm exhausted and I can't read. But it's been fun. Just now my youngest is 3. Everyone's kind of, you know, everyone's sleeping through the night and all of that. And so I've found, you know, even on a Sunday afternoon, I found myself able to just kind of say, hey, you guys play with Legos and hang out, and mama's going to sit and read a book. And that's been really wonderful.
Yes. Yes. Reading is wonderful. My kids are all grown, but I can remember when my daughter was, 16, and my baby, the youngest, was 4.
Oh,
12 years between them. And I would be like, can you please hang out with the youngest and keep an eye on him so that I can just step away for half an hour?
Yeah.
Just half an hour. And there were 2 between the oldest and the youngest. So it was a very busy household. And she would be like, of course, because she saw him as a little dolly.
Yeah.
Even at 4, he was still her baby brother. So
yeah.
And I would get the chance to read too. And I can remember being so thankful for that half an hour to just step away for a little bit. And it's funny that you bring up Stephen King, because my first book I ever read, chapter book, I was in first grade, and yeah. I read A Wrinkle in Time. That was the book that hooked me.
Mine was Little House in the Big Woods.
Yeah, it could have been mine too, but yeah. For some reason that wasn't the one I picked up. However, I read every single Laura Ingalls Wilder book.
The best.
But I was reading chapter books when I was 6. And by the time I was 11 or 12, I was into actual novels. And I can remember going to the library, riding my bike 2 miles to the library, and going to the grown-up part of the library, because the library then had a children's section and an adult section.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean what everyone thinks it means. It means grown-up books.
Adult wasn't really a thing. I mean, it took a little while to become a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I found Salem's Lot by Stephen King.
Yeah.
And I took it to the checkout desk. And the lady behind the counter was like, you can't take that out. What are you, 9? And I was like, no, I'm 12. And she said, your parents won't appreciate you bringing that home. And I said, call them. Here's the phone number.
No way.
I said, please call them and ask them if it's okay. And she happened to get my dad. And my dad is a very progressive man. He is incredibly smart. And this was a long time ago. And she said, is it okay if your daughter reads this book? And he said, yes, yes, it is. She can read any book in your library. And the lady said, okay. So I went home with Salem's Lot, and I read it cover to cover, and I think I had 2 bad dreams from it, but that was it.
Yeah, bad dreams, that'll totally happen. Boy, I love that you said that to the librarian. That's really great, and that your parents supported you in that. My parents were always very clear that no one, that we, you know, we needed to be respectful, which you were, you know, you needed to be respectful in how you talked to adults, but that no adult had authority over you. I mean, that they were, you know, that's, you were just as smart as them. You were just as valuable as them. You were just as important. And that was, I think that's a great strength that really instills confidence, mm-hmm. in a child as they're growing up.
Yeah, my parents always, I don't think they ever directly said it to me, but they always gave me the impression that if I thought that something was not correct, to be polite, but verify.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't necessarily teach me how to do it either. And I really wanted to read this book. I read the blurb on the back and I was like, ooh, this sounds really good. And then I was told that I couldn't do it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. I am completely capable of reading the words on the page. And so that's why that happened. But I am still a fan of Stephen King today. I am going to cry when he dies. No joke. I will. I will sob because that means no more Stephen King books. And that's going to be a terrible day in my life. But I've never met him. I have been up to the house in Bangor with the crazy gate with the bats and the spiders and stuff. I have stopped outside of it, and my husband has taken pictures of the gate, which made me really uncomfortable because it's somebody's house, and I thought that it was not appropriate, but he took them anyway. And I don't think Stephen King cares, but it's so funny that you've met him. Is he as interesting as I think that he must be?
Super interesting. And I met him. He was in town for a book conference in Minneapolis, and he and several other authors have a band together. And so they were going to play at the conference. And so we went to their hotel room. And hotel room sounds weird. It was like a large hotel suite where they were all gathered together, hanging out, and they were practicing. And then we got to interview them. And Stephen King, when I walked in the door, came up to me and was like, oh my gosh, and gave me a big hug. And it was, I was like, this is so amazing. And so not what I anticipated Stephen King doing. Mm-hmm. Turned out he thought I was someone else. He thought I was this author. Now I can't remember her name. I got to ask our former producer. He thought I was an author. And when we ended up looking up a picture of her, I do look quite similar to her. And so he thought it. And so then he was like so apologetic, and it was so, and I was like, no, it was great. I'm so happy to meet you. I'm a huge fan. And so then I got to interview him and several other authors, and then, and hang out and chat. And it was just really, it was really great. And our photographer, the photographer who came with me was, he was also our former executive producer, but he was such a huge fan of Stephen King. He's like, I have to come and shoot this for you. Like, please let me come. I have to come. And we both left that room being like, we just hung out with Stephen King. Like, this is the coolest. So it was really great. And that's, you know, that's something I think that's so cool about the job, is just getting to kind of have these like surreal moments where you get to meet people who really impacted you when you were young, or who you really, you know, just adored, and people who really influenced you. And then as an adult, you get to meet them. There's kind of those times where I'm like, oh my gosh, like 12-year-old Elizabeth would be like, what is happening? I can't even believe that happened to you. You know, stuff I could have never even imagined when I was that age.
Yeah. And there's a saying about don't meet your heroes, but I think in some cases it's totally fine to meet your heroes.
Yeah. I mean, and I think especially just not necessarily having an expectation that they're going to be this amazing thing, that they're just human, and that having a real appreciation for what they gave you in that moment. But everyone that I've met that I like really loved as a child has ended up being absolutely wonderful, who I've met in real life. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I asked if you were an information junkie is because my dad is perpetually curious, and so am I. I wonder who I got it from. And he calls it got to know-itis.
That's cute.
Get that? Okay.
Yeah,
got to know-itis.
Yeah.
And my husband, when I first met him, I'd be like, so what's that? How does that work? Why does that work that way? Da, 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 da. Tons of questions about his job or whatever he was doing. And he was like, do you ever not ask questions? And I was like, are you kidding? Never. If you don't like it, I need to go somewhere else. And he was like, no, I've just never known anybody who is so genuinely curious.
Oh, I think that's such a great quality. Curiosity is such a wonderful quality. And I love surrounding myself with curious people. I love, I think it's just always exciting, and you always just come at life from a place of like, oh, I wonder if this, I wonder what's that, what that's like. I wonder what that is. And like looking at the world with curiosity and wonder is just the most beautiful perspective.
Yeah, he told me I was like a 5-year-old, and I laughed. And I said, you know, I said, if more people looked at the world like a 5-year-old does, it might be a better place.
That's so true. My children in the backseat of the car, you know, I pick them up every day from school after the show. And just the questions that they ask when we're driving home are hilarious. And I and they also follow no train. You know, it's like then another question just pops up out of nowhere. I think it's so entertaining.
Yeah. When I was in my teens, my dad was working on one of the cars and he had it up on the jack and he was under the car and he'd been outside and it was hot. And I stepped outside and he was doing something and I asked him what he was doing and I got a one sentence response. And I said, well, what does that do? And I got another one sentence response and I kept asking questions. And he says, Mary Evelyn, I love you more than life itself, but will you please go see what your mom's doing right now? I said, I love you too. I went in the house and I told my mom what my dad had asked me to do. She says, honey, he's been working on that car for the last couple of days off and on, and he can't find the problem. You were driving him crazy with your questions. I was like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. She said, tell him you're sorry when he comes in. I said, okay. So that's the obnoxious teenage girl that I was.
And
I wish that he had not been so frustrated because he did not get that I was genuinely interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And most girls aren't interested in car repair, or they weren't then. And had he answered my questions and shown me how to do things, I might have been able to do it for him the next time, but that's not how that went. But I have the perpetually curious thing, and that's kind of what made me want to do this podcast, even though I had no idea how to do a podcast, how to make it go, what programs to use, nothing 6 months ago. And so I ended up talking. I've released almost 40 episodes now.
That's
and
great.
I have talked to so many wonderful, smart, passionate people. And part of the reason I want to talk to you is because I feel like you have the got to know itis bug too. And I read some of your blog posts and they're great.
Thank you.
And your blog is Home to Homesteader, or am I saying?
Yeah, Home to Homestead. So the idea that kind of any home can be a homestead. It's just in how you look at it and what you do with it.
Yep. And you do a podcast yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What is that one called?
The podcast is called Best to the Nest. And the premise of the podcast I co-host with Marjorie Punnett, who was a longtime radio personality in the Twin Cities with her husband, Ian. They had a radio show together for 10 years. And it is based on the idea of bringing your best self home. So not that everybody on the outside gets the best of you, that home gets the best and the most, and then everyone else gets the overflow. Sort of like a more holistic view of like fill your own cup. But really fill your own home's cup first.
Okay. I have not had a chance to listen to any of it, so I'm going to have to go do that.
Good.
Weekend.
You would love it. We have a lot of episodes for you to get through. It's a really great passion project.
Yeah, and maybe I'll learn some more about how to make a podcast do well.
You're doing great.
I'm trying so hard to not be obnoxious, and I feel like I keep sharing the same things over and over again, but it's about homesteading and gardening and making things. So how many things can I talk about, really?
I love that.
And I have to stop talking about my dog because I talk about my dog all the time, and I was so happy to see that you have dogs because I was like, if I mention the dog, it's okay.
Yep, so, we have a German short hair pointer named Gracie Lou. Lulu, we call her.
Mm-hmm. She's beautiful.
Thank you.
I saw pictures on one of the things I looked at.
Yeah, she's our bird dog. She's a great, great dog. They're wonderful with kids too.
Yeah. I think dogs are fantastic and I'm so sick of being obnoxious about it, but I'm going to do it again. Our dog is 3.5. We got her to be a watchdog because one of the things you don't realize when you move to the middle of nowhere in surrounded by cornfields or alfalfa fields or whatever's growing around you is you do feel isolated at night.
Yeah.
And when we moved here, I was like, we're going to need a dog that will bark when people pull in the driveway, because if somebody knocks on that door, I am going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, it's nice to, I mean, even, you know, and even when we're in the city, I mean, having a dog bark is important. My dog was, I had a people come over this morning and for a shoot, and she barks only when people show up, and it's great. Yeah. And I want people to know that she's there. That's good.
Yes. Absolutely. And I, of course, have no idea what Maggie would actually do if the person on our property was a threat, because no one has been a threat.
Right, right.
But boy, she lets us know when someone that she doesn't know is here. And she's a little dog. She's like 35 pounds. I'm sure she could hurt somebody, but it's not like she's going to rip their arm off.
Yeah.
But her bark is incredibly loud and shrill when she is afraid and on defense mode. So, but I had no idea how much I would love having a dog, because we hadn't had a dog before.
Oh, wow.
My parents had dogs, and my husband's parents had dogs, but my husband and I had never had a dog pet. We'd had cats. So it was a whole new experience, and we were really afraid we were going to break her. We were going to ruin this dog from, you know, 8 weeks on. And she's great. We love her to pieces, and I'm going to stop right now. Otherwise, it's going to become 15 minutes about Maggie, and we don't need to talk about Maggie for that long. It's fine. So anyway, we've been talking for 45 minutes, and I try to keep these to half an hour, but I knew this would run long because I was excited to talk with you.
So fun.
Elizabeth, I would love to have you back. I don't know, maybe same time next year, just to catch up and see what
I think
you're
working
on.
Great. This has been such a lovely conversation. I love, you know, just getting to chit chat and talk with other people who are really passionate about some of the same things that I am is really wonderful.
That's why I started this podcast, because I needed to talk to people who were doing things like I'm doing.
I know. So, it's good. You got to find your people.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Elizabeth, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to being back.
You have a great day. Bye.